Cody, huh? You got a good memory for names. Too good.
How do you like that, boys? A cop. And I was going to split 50-50 with a cop. Now tell me you're glad to see me. Only say it slowly.
All I wanted was for you to come back. That's the truth. I love you, Cody. I love you. I look good in a mink coat, honey.
You look good in a shower curtain.
It was Big Ed. He told me to do it. You wouldn't kill me in cold blood, would you?
No, I'll let you warm up a little.
Let him have it.
Oh, no. And lose our ace in the hole, he's going to walk us out of here. Ain't you, copper?
Ed.
Still got nerves?
Welcome to Movie Umpers. My name is Bob Sham.
I am Angela.
With a heavy heart that we bid farewell with this episode all month long for 5 days a week, which you can go back and watch or listen to at any time. We discuss classic film noir. 21 film noir discussions occurred by the time we get to the end of this episode. And yeah, The Left-Hand Endeavor, by the way, I took that quote from a film noir that we didn't discuss this month.
Right.
A John Huston movie called The Asphalt Jungle, which is also supposed to be a really well-regarded one, but the term is quoted from that movie, and we did not discuss The Asphalt Jungle.
I am really sad that this month is over. I think we could do a whole other month.
I have felt very inspired in my personal creative concepts and ideas. There's something about movies of this time, this style of movie.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gets my brain going, you know. Mm-hmm. It's among our favorite type. And the one we're closing out on today is the wildest one, I think. You know, even more wild than, like, Gun Crazy. This one probably takes the cake in terms of just, like, wanton violence, right? And it stars
wanton violence,
wanton soup violence, and it stars the one and only James Cagney. He's the guy that goes, "Yeah, see," which we closed out on a lot of episodes this month of. But James Cagney was a prominent, he was a very veteran actor by the time we get to this movie, known for his gangster roles and kind of that. The epitome of the gangster character actor.
Yeah.
It's interesting. He had a very contentious relationship with Warner Brothers, particularly Jack Warner. Jack Warner straight up didn't like his ass. And at one point in the 40s, James Cagney got out, like, left Warner Brothers and tried to make his own movies.
Oh.
And some of them were fairly well regarded, but people didn't go and watch them. And by the time we're deep into the 40s, we're kind of past James Cagney's prime. He had influenced a lot of the guys that we've been seeing all month long, but it was kind of a little past peak, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in this movie, he's like 50 years old,
yeah.
Which he does not look 50, but he is.
He does not look 50, and he's also the embodiment of the small tough guy.
Yeah.
He's like the little guy who's the boss.
So much to, Cagney's chagrin, he kind of did go back to Warner Brothers after he put out three films that didn't do that great. And Jack Warner did not want to put him in this movie, but the writers were like,
"He's perfect.
Do you not see who this character is?"
Yeah.
Like, there's only one guy that can embody this character. And what's apparently what's interesting here is that this is a gangster movie.
Yeah.
Cagney was in a lot of gangster movies. So there's like a lot of scenes in here that kind of seem to almost play up to a lot of roles that he's, a lot of roles and situations that he was involved in movies. So this movie kind of is this culmination of this veteran actor.
Yeah.
And in some ways it may be, I mean, I'm not an expert on James Cagney, but after watching this movie, I feel like I want to watch a lot more James Cagney movies.
Absolutely.
I kind of imagining maybe through a modern concept, right? Like Joe Pesci in Goodfellas.
Yes, yes, yes.
Or in Casino.
That's exactly what I was, who I was thinking of when I was saying the small
but
gangster.
The lead.
Yes.
And this movie is apparently another movie that inspired Martin Scorsese.
Absolutely.
It makes perfect sense because this is a kind of a noir film that's totally from the perspective of the perpetrators, right? Mm-hmm. And that is all of Scorsese's gangster movies are like that. So it makes perfect sense how this movie would inspire. And we got a higher body count in this movie than
anything.
Yeah, maybe than all this week combined, at least. But yeah, we're talking about the movie White Heat from 1949. Starring, directed by Raoul Walsh. And yeah, it stars James Cagney. Virginia Mayo plays his no good girlfriend. Edmund O'Brien, who was the insurance guy in The Killers. Angela is in love with this
I'm
guy.
I'm in love
now.
With him.
And Margaret Wickerly, who plays the mother of,
she's great.
Cody Jarrett. She's, Mrs. Jarrett.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the original script of this movie was basically about like Ma Barker and the Barker Gang.
I actually thought about that while we were watching this because I know that story.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of her name, and I didn't look it up today because I didn't think about it. But I was thinking about Ma Barker because she's sort of running the show through her kid.
Yeah.
You know, but she's always there. She's in the meetings and she's calling the shots.
Right. And they just stripped it down. I mean, this character has a brother who died. And a father who died in a mental institution, which kind of alludes to his mental state throughout this movie. And but yeah, it's just stripped down to the Cody Jarrett character as played by James Cagney.
I love that at one point they make the comment that when he was a kid, he would fake headaches to get his mother's attention. But then he really started getting these headaches like his father, like his brother.
Yeah. And we first see his headaches when he drops to the ground in pain.
I thought he was having a heart attack.
And he's holding like a .45 and he shoots off the .45. Apparently that scene was improvised.
Wow. That was brilliant.
It's just a very, this movie's so fucking visceral.
These guys like understand their characters so well, too.
Yeah. I mean, James Cagney can play a gangster with his eyes closed at this point, but like, he's the ultimate gangster. This is why this
ruthless.
Is such a perfect epitomizing role for James Cagney. And yeah, it focuses on him and he's scary as shit.
And he is a man. It's so perfect. Like you talking about all the other movies because he is also a man ostensibly nearing the end of his gangster career.
Yeah.
Like he's been doing this for decades. He's worked his way to the leader of this gang. You know, he has his guys and his ma and his girl, and he's the boss.
He's literally mentally ill and psychotic.
Yes. But,
and while that has kept him alive, I mean, his luck's going to run out eventually, right?
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
We open up with a train robbery, and he even jumps off an overpass bridge.
Onto the train.
So we got a little stunt action here. And so the boys, some guys are on the train, and some guys are following with a car. It's all this big plan. And some guys hold the conductor hostages and they start executing like prisoners.
Well, because one of the dudes says Cody's name.
Sounds bad, Cody.
Why don't you give him my address too?
Okay. It's so good. And then so obviously Cody now has to shoot these two guys. Well, the new kid has jumped off the train. And when he shoots the second guy who also knows his name, the guy falls. And hits the steam engine, like, lever.
And it torches his face.
It was we never saw the man's face, but it was fucking brutal. Like, yep. They did it so well.
Yeah. And so they have to, so they managed to get the money, and four people are fucking dead, like, in the first 5 minutes mm-hmm. of this movie. And they go to a hideout, and they have to lay low because everything is hot as fuck.
And this is one of those moments where he did the right thing. Like, you see this in Scorsese later, right? The whole, like, don't go buy a bunch of furs. Don't go spend a bunch of money. Don't go fucking doing that shit because people are going to know. And when the guys do it, you get fucked. Like, I thought of that specifically.
Yeah, when they're bringing his ladies in wearing, like,
yes! mink. And he's like, where the fuck did this come from? What are you doing? And so, truly, his lady is like, I'd look really good in a fur. And he's like, chill your pussy out. Like, wait.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guys are like, we're stuck up here eating bullshit.
Yeah, you're crazy.
It's cold. And he's like, we have to wait. So somebody else had robbed a bank in another town that had gotten blamed on the same people. And he's like, see, we're doing this right.
Yeah.
They think we're in another state. And we're good.
And the guy who got hit with the steam is on the couch in pain, wrapped in bandages.
Fully wrapped bandages, face. Like, no painkillers. Forget his it. Mouth.
Well, a storm hits, and that presents the opportunity to, or at least enough distraction, because everyone's going to be dealing with the storm, to kind of make their way and make the run and get out of the state or wherever the fuck they are.
And they go to California.
But the guy, they can't bring the guy who's, like, suffering from his burns. So fucking Cody says, hands him a gun. He's like, why don't you put your friend out of your misery?
And right? It's like the guy's best friend. So
the guy, like, shoots in the air to make it sound like he's killing him.
And he gives the guy a pack of cigarettes and he's like, I will come back for you as soon as I can. Well, they go to California. We find out later that guy never went back for him, and he obviously got scared and decided to go out into the storm to try to get away on his own, and he died. He froze to death.
And that's when we meet our federales who mm-hmm. relay that information, and
I love these cops, and I won't say that very often, but these guys were great because these detectives, the detectives in particular, I really got like a...
This movie will teach you all about triangulating radio signals.
They were so very sort of scientific in their methods, and it was very focused, truly like Twin Peaks agent level, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. Like we need to, everything was very like,
for sure.
You know, like it really made me...
Rigid do-goodery types.
Yeah, rigid do-goodery types. Like, they find them because of the marked bills.
Right.
And they know where it's what city they're in, but they don't know where they are. And so they've got guys, like, all over the city, these cops. And fucking Ma goes out to get goddamn strawberries for her baby boy.
Cody wants it.
Love this part. The wife is, like, in her new mink fur coat, up on a chair, looking at herself in the mirror. And Cody comes in. And he's like, where's Ma? And she's like, she went out to this store. And he's like, what store? And she's like,
you like strawberries, don't you? Well, she just had to get some for her boy.
And he fucking kicks the chair. And, like, she falls on the couch. That and she's not hurt.
That was also improvised.
I love this movie.
Yeah, this movie's fucking great.
It's so fucking good.
We also see Cody have one of his headaches. When we first see him have his headache,
it's in the hideout.
He goes to his ma in the back room, and the ma comforts him and rubs his head, mm-hmm. and she's the one that kind of comforts him in these moments.
And it passes very quickly, and he explains that when it happens, it feels like there's like a white hot blade going through his head, but then it passes.
Well, so the cops are up on their tail in California, and he does manage to escape with his wife and mother, but he decides that he had set up a false alibi a long time ago for an Illinois job that apparently happened around the same time this train robbery.
And he knew he would get max 3 years.
Yeah, and he's like, what I can do is I can go and I can confess to doing this job and I can serve time for it and it will totally cover me.
I'll have an alibi.
What I did in the train, which would probably get me the gas chamber because four people are fucking dead.
So he's like, Ma, you run the gang. Wifey, you wait for me.
Yeah, and don't I'll be go back. And don't go fucking Big Ed while I'm gone.
Yeah, Big Ed is this guy who's like, you know, there's always the one who's young and thinks he knows what's best and wants to be the big boss.
Yeah.
And the mom's kind of already watching out for him, and the wife's already kind of making eyes at him. So you know something's happening.
So Cody's getting sent up to a prison in Illinois and Springfield, and that's when the Federales tap Edmund O'Brien,
my boyfriend,
to go be an undercover guy. He wants to go on vacation.
He's been undercover for like five straight years.
And go fishing. This guy needs like a year off after this shit.
Okay, couple of things in this movie that are brilliant and we had never seen before. So we actually saw the 1940s version of a car phone, which is essentially a radio, but you're speaking into a phone receiver.
Into a ported phone, yeah.
Which is brilliant, which kind of gets into how they find them at the end, talking on all these radios, like doing their signals.
And they have a big circle antenna on the top of the
car. And they're like finding the right like frequency, like on this huge turn thing. Yeah. It's so cool. Also, I love when in this, his name's Fallon.
Edmund O'Brien.
O'Brien as Fallon comes in and he's got this little thing in his hand. And the other cop's like, what is that? And he's like, well, you see.
You put it on a pole, wind a spool of silk thread around it, and you hold the pole over the water. Then you sit under a nice shady tree and relax. After a while, a hungry fish comes along, takes a nip at your hook, and you've got dinner. For the next 2 weeks, I'm not going to think about anything except the eternal struggle between man and the fish.
Did they just invent this type of reel at that time?
I think so.
Yeah, I got this new
thing.
Like,
nobody knows what this is.
Wow.
He's, like, explaining it.
But they're like, yeah, you want to go fishing, but you're not.
It's like a newfangled thing.
You're actually going to get sent up to this prison in Springfield, and you're going to try. We're going to stick you right in Cody Jarrett's cell, and you're going to buddy him up.
And you got to figure out, it's like $300,000 that was stolen, so his whole goal is just, where's the money?
Yeah, you got to figure out who he's sending the money to launder it, essentially.
Yes, who's the fence?
And so, yeah, he goes in. And, of course, no one trusts him immediately. Mm-mm. But
this is brilliant.
And his alias is Vic Pardo on the inside.
The part I really love, though, is that he's got the alias, but they also go through the process of putting him in front of a court and having him convicted. Like, he actually sees Cody in the courtroom. Like, they bump into each other because he's getting convicted right after Cody.
Right, right.
And they put him in the jail, and not even anyone in the jail knows that he's a cop. No. Because that could give you away.
Well, there is the one guy who would know. That he explains to them is like, this guy's got to, you got to make sure this guy gets out before.
Well, that's
I go
not
in,
till the end.
Because I arrested him.
Oh, yes.
And so he goes in.
It's
and
another inmate.
Something happened with this inmate. His release.
He got sick.
It was delayed. His release was delayed. And he finds out he's still in there when he gets in line to go get vaccinated. And this guy is issuing vaccinations.
This is a pro vax movie.
And so, yeah, it is. Pro giving prisoners, giving people vaccines. And this guy sees that the guy he put away is ahead of him. The only guy that can identify him is a cop. And he goes and he takes a swing on the guy behind him and makes a big, like, fuss to where he has to get thrown in solitary confinement.
For a month.
Which gives him more than enough time for this guy to get out of prison. And then he can come out. And that does, and the fact that he starts fighting people and he makes it like he just didn't want his shots.
You see Cody being like, all right.
So, yeah.
All right. He's a little, because he says before that to him at some point that he doesn't buy him. He's like, something's off with this guy. I don't trust him.
The police,
but this makes him trust him.
The police also send him mail like he's got a wife. Seems like it'd be easier to just not give him a wife.
No, he has to have someone meet him. And he said it needs to be a younger person because the last place he was in undercover, they sent someone to be his mom, and it was an older lady, and she couldn't remember the fucking things he was telling her. So he's like, give me a younger person who's gonna remember shit. And they're like, okay, we'll give you a wife, we'll send you her picture so you know what she looks like.
Well, he figures out how to ingratiate into Cody Jarrett's friendship, because Cody rightfully doesn't trust anyone. But they work out in this machine yard, and this one guy, Big Ed, has tapped this one guy on the inside to take out Jarrett and make it look like an accident.
Mm-hmm. And he's run, and Big Ed's run off with Jarrett, with Cody's wife.
So this guy, the guy who's one of Big Ed's boys, who's looking to kill him, he operates this industrial hook, and he's rolling it over Cody Jarrett while he's fucking with some stuff, and he's going to drop it on him. And right before he does so, Edmund O'Brien, alias Vic Pardo, manages to shove Jarrett out of the way right when the hook falls, right where he's standing.
Yeah. Two things about this scene that were brilliant. Cody's just doing his job. He's like emptying these buckets into this garbage can. He goes somewhere else for like a minute to go get another bucket or something. And the guy who's operating the machinery, it's not like he just drops this thing on Cody. He goes over and like moves the garbage can. And that's when our guy Fallon notices that something's happening. He's like, why'd that guy move that garbage can?
Yeah, yeah.
And then he's like watching him because, I mean, he's going to be watching everything anyway. But the fact that it wasn't just so clean as like, oh, he's just going to drop this thing. Like, he had to maneuver it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't just easy. Which you might see in a movie, like, oh, he's just going to drop that thing on him. Like, that extra moment of him moving that garbage can was brilliant. And then right after this, you know, all this shit's going on, and Cody gets a headache.
And this is when it really works, because he comforts Cody, and he stashes him behind some machinery so the other people don't see him, suffering. And because that's a big deal, Cody doesn't want to seem like vulnerable, and he kind of comforts him like the same way that Cody's mother comforts him.
Mm-hmm. And sure Cody enough, needs a ma.
Yeah, because Cody finds out later that his ma is dead, and we don't know how until a little later, but mm-hmm. she does die. And but yeah, so that's when Cody Jarrett then starts to be very open. He confesses that he's serving a cover job for a more hardcore job. But he doesn't reveal where the money's getting filtered yet.
No, and they've already planned to escape.
Yeah.
And he trusts our undercover guy enough that they're going to go together. But ends up that because Cody kind of loses it when he finds out his mom is dead, because he's unhinged. And he ends up in a straitjacket in the infirmary, and one of his buddies is like coming in to feed him, and so they work out a deal where that buddy has a gun, and
he has a smuggled in gun.
They end up, like, five of them end up getting out. They kill a couple guys on their way out. And one of the guys that they take with them is the guy who tried to kill him.
Yeah. As well as, the old man that they hang with and Vic Pardo. It's an initial escape that he does get word to the Federales about, but that one goes tits up because when Cody Jarrett realizes his mom's dead, he's a psychopath, so he loses his fucking shit.
Right.
And so suddenly the escape set up just on the fly by Cody himself.
Yeah, so it doesn't go down the way it was supposed to go down.
Everyone is actually quite surprised when the doctor is calling them in, and they go into this office, and it's like, oh, Cody is holding all these people hostage. Let's all get the fuck out of here. We're taking this guy mm-hmm. with us so he can get the gates open. And sure enough, it works. They all take the fuck off, and they are free.
Yeah, and they go to another safe house. And that's when we find out that they never know where their next job is. It's all arranged by this fence. Mm-hmm. And they don't know until the day of where they're going.
Well, Cody tracks down Verna, his wife, who's been fucking Big Ed. And this mm-hmm. is when it's revealed that Verna killed Cody's mother.
Shot her
in the back. So at one point, Verna knows Cody's out. And she knows he's going to find her. So at one point, she tries to sneak out, even after Big Ed has rigged the place with noise traps. But she sneaks out through a window, and she goes into the barn where they keep the car, and Cody is there. So she
convinces him
that Big Ed is the one that shot her in the back.
Shot the mother in the back, yeah.
So they sneak back in, and then they set Big Ed up.
And she's only been with Big Ed because Big Ed was threatening her, and she wanted to be with Cody always.
It's a great scene where Cody's sneaking up behind her and Big Ed wants some sugar from Verna. Uh-huh. And Verna has to kind of pretend like, oh, this isn't really what I'm into. Even though she's been gladly fucking this guy while he's been doing time.
Oh, yeah.
But then, yeah, this guy gets plugged. Just one of many dead bodies in this movie. The body count, this is the most body count of any movie
we've seen this month. Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, Cody and Verna are back together, unfortunately for Verna. Well, Verna's still alive. That's all that really matters there, right?
Yeah.
So it's time to plot another heist. But when they go to a safe house, this lost man who with a fishing basket, he wants to use a phone. And Cody's like, yeah, come on. You come inside, I'll be using the phone.
Everybody else tried to send him away.
And Pardo is walking. Oh, the guy that tried to kill Cody, he gets shot through in a trunk.
How you doing, Parker?
Stuffy in here. I need some air.
Oh, stuffy, huh? I'll give it a layer.
I'll give you some air. And he just shoots into the trunk.
Yeah.
And so, well, Cody is bringing this fisherman into their hideout. And Pardo, you know, is like, well, that guy's fucking dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he's just going to let him into his house. So Pardo goes in while Cody's talking.
Well, they don't hear
guy.
A gunshot. And yeah. They're all like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, Pardo goes in and he asks, he's kind of grilling this guy. He's like, what you fishing for? And he's like,
bass.
This guy's a phony, Cody.
I beg your pardon.
This is trout country. There ain't bass for 100 miles. What's so funny?
You're right on your toes, kid. Bass. He got you, didn't he? Trader, this is the kid I've been telling you about. Meet Vic Pardo.
Hello.
No, this is the money guy. This is the guy we run the money for.
And that's when we find out that Cody was planning on splitting 50-50 with Pardo like he used to with his mom. Like, Pardo is his mother now.
Yes, Pardo is. Cody even breastfeeds from him in one scene in this movie. He's weaned on Pardo's milk.
He really does trust Pardo, though. You know, this whole thing happens, and so they find out there's going to be this new job. But later that night, Pardo is sneaking out the window because I think he's going to try to go get a message, right? Because he hasn't been able to get a message to his cops. The cops know he's with him, but they don't know where he is. Mm-hmm. And he sneaks out the window, and one of the other guys, like, stops him because he's on the lookout. And Cody has been out in the field talking to his mom.
Yeah.
And so they end up having this conversation where Pardo convinces him that he just wanted to go see his
wife. Yes, he's talking to his dead mother.
Yeah, he wanted to go see his wife. And then Cody, you know, admits to him, like, I've just been walking around talking to mom. Bet you think that makes me pretty weird or crazy or something. And and Pardo, like, is like, no, like, I get that. Of course you are. Like, just comforting him. He thinks of him as family at this point.
Well, Verna's radio's broken and Pardo volunteers to help fix it. But what he does is he straps the radio underneath this gas truck that his boys paid $12,000 for.
To all sneak in like a fucking Trojan horse.
Yeah, and Cody's trashing it at first, but then he realizes then the Trojan horse story is like, oh yeah, and they're going to go rob the payday of a chemical plant.
Another payroll robbery.
Yeah, payroll robberies all month long.
Because I think banks, you know, the bills are going to be marked, but a payroll, why would they be?
Yeah, true.
It's smart, actually.
And it's like a big factory, so that's going to be a lot of payouts for a lot of people. So, but Pardo can't, he's got this radio set up, and they know he can triangulate the frequency.
He knows the cops can.
But, so they're all going with this gas truck, and it's a pretty tense scene. Pardo has them stop, and he goes into a bathroom, and he writes on the soap, like, all the coordinates in the area that the cops need to, well.
He writes a message so they know that they can track him.
And that they know he's in this area. And the note tells the people who see it where he can go look. And there's a point where they almost catch him writing it. And he throws his jacket on the window.
Yeah.
He's washing his hands. But sure enough, the gas station attendant eventually sees what's going on.
Calls the cops.
And the cops know. And then we get this scene where they're on their way to the chemical plant, and it's like they narrow it down by tracking the radio signals that are bouncing it across.
Multiple
the city.
Cars are driving around. Oh, another thing from the very beginning, because they're on these little phones talking to each other, their radio phones, they do this brilliant thing when they're chasing his mom to try to find the hideout in California, where they've got three cars, and the one guy in charge is like mapping it out so that she doesn't know that someone's following her. He's like, okay, you get to this street, but you keep going straight. Don't follow her. Okay, car B, you turn on this street to catch her on this other street. Like, they're very strategic. And
the signals are reaching a point to where they need to find. Yeah, so then now
they're like driving around finding like this car's in this place, this car's in this place.
Also, even though they don't see each other face to face until they're well into the chemical plant, the guy that Pardo had to make sure was out of prison got hired for this job.
He's the driver.
And he's the driver, but he never sees his face until they're well into the plant. Some of those
scenes are played brilliantly.
So there's this tension to where they're all together and they're not looking at each other, and it's like, when's he going to turn around? When's he going to turn around? And he doesn't do it for a long time.
Yeah. The cops are already there at this point. They know the cops are there.
They're swarming. And when they're well in and they know something is up, then the guy turns around and he tells Cody, that's the fucking copper. And then Cody's just like, all he can do at this point is just laugh at himself.
A copper. How do you like that, boys? A copper. And his name is Fallon. And we went for it. I went for it. Treated him like a kid brother. And I was going to split 50-50 with a copper. Maybe they're waiting to pin a medal on him.
Solid gold.
Fallon, now, because that's his real name, has a gun. He gets away from them and gets back with the cops. They don't kill him.
Yeah.
At least, thank goodness. So he gets away, but then there's this kind of shootout, and literally the whole gang dies except two guys. Yeah. I mean, say what you want about this part.
Well, it's just a big-ass fucking shootout, and Cody Jarrett and is climbing up this thing. It's a chemical plant, so things could set on fire if you're shooting at certain pipes and shit.
Yeah, and the guy in charge is like, do not fire unless you have a 100% shot, because the whole thing's going to explode.
So yeah, all of Cody's crew is getting blasted, and Cody gets up to the top, and they see him. And I think it's O'Brien. They hand him like a
yeah, they do, because he's like a rifle. Sniper.
And like O'Brien, like Fallon can do like literally everything.
Yeah.
And then he's like shooting.
And he shoots him like twice.
Like he takes like three bullets.
He actually says at one point, he's like, how is he hanging on?
Because he's a fucking maniac. He's a psycho. He's just what? He's getting shot and he's laughing.
And you have to play the part where he stands on. Before the very end, he sends one of his guys out, and then fucking
shoots him.
Cody
in the
shoots him. Yeah. In front of the cops. He's basically just like, I want you all to know for sure that I don't give two fucks about anyone.
Yeah. And
Also the wife also came up to the cops at one point and was like, I'll tell you everything. I'll tell you everything if you'll be lenient. And they're like, no, take her to jail.
Which was funny. Like, why bring her there just to tell her not to?
Well, I think a regular little like knows nothing cop brought her to the detective to be like, she says she has something to give you. And she tells him, I'll turn on him, whatever. And they're like, no, just fucking get out of here.
Well, it's a big standoff. Cody's been shot three times and he's just cackling like a maniac.
Climbs on the very top.
And then what is often quoted as top of the world, Ma. But what he actually says... His Ma always wanted him to be on top of the world, and he shoots this chemical tank and it blows the whole fucking thing up. Cody Jarrett, he may have been snookered by some copper, but ain't nobody gonna take Cody Jarrett out but fucking Cody Jarrett.
Yep.
And that's the end of the goddamn movie. Top of the world, Ma.
Top of the world.
Will you look at me? Top of the world, Ma. What just, this was like a good Scorsese movie in that it's violent. The main characters are irredeemable psychopaths.
Right.
And it's also weirdly easy to digest, kind of like a Departed or a good, like, there's something so digestible and fun, but also it's but these people just feel so fucking dangerous at the same time.
Yeah.
It really does feel like a Scorsese movie before we ever got one.
And, you know, you said at the top of this that this was potentially more crazy than anything else we've seen. And yet, easy to follow, which means it's written fucking brilliantly. Yeah. You're never confused about what's happening for even a second, even though it is a very complicated plot. They tell it so well. They explain everything so well. You
know, for Cagney movies, like The Roaring Twenties, I think that won a Best Picture of the year it came out. That's kind of the one that probably gets the most service. But this movie is so good. So fun, so good, so dangerous. You can't help but just soak it all in.
Let's just go ahead and say this is an S-tier this movie.
Let's not even give a number to it. It's an S-tier movie.
It's an S-tier.
That's right, folks. We've hit the S-tier a lot this month, and why wouldn't we? You know, there's some bona fide classics here, and we in our at the bottom of our list, right underneath There Will Be Blood and Thief, is Raoul Walsh's White Heat, the James Cagney masterpiece from 1949. We end the left-hand endeavor on a high note.
Yep.
So next week, we'll be finishing off the Europa Trilogy by Von Trier. We're watching, by the end of the year, we'll have discussed 12 Lars von Trier movies. And we're getting into our new comedy theme. We're revisiting our awkward laughter theme, our earliest episodes. One of our early, our first ever theme. I don't think it was I think Animation Overdose was our first theme. And then it was Awkward Laughter, where we watched slapstick comedies.
Mm-hmm.
But the comedies we'll be watching all April long were box office flops. They were not movies that made their initial money back. Maybe they made it back later in rentals or whatever. I think some did. But these are movies that some are cult successes. Some were reviled in their time. And we're going to reexamine them and see how they stand upon reflection. Some of these flop comedies that maybe didn't make it at the box office, but maybe make it in a more cult admiration.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we say goodbye to the left-hand endeavor. And so check the show notes for links, other places to find us. I'm going to miss watching these movies. I can never be far away from a crime movie. We got to maybe come up with an excuse to watch some more before too long. But like, subscribe, leave a comment, corrections, fun facts, whatever you choose. And we'll leave it with, I think it's something that James Cagney was stereotypically known to say.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, see. It's fun, everybody get on, make me run, do it. Fire!